tide is right. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us, to some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey everybody, welcome. A good Thursday.
And I'm thinking it's Friday, Father.
I'm the one that always thinks it's Friday. It's Thursday. How do you say it, Tony?
Thursday.
You say Thursday.
You both got me confused. I don't know what day it is.
Thursday. Can you see the difference? Hear the difference between Thursday and Thursday?
Yes.
Thursday.
Because Tony says Thursday, right?
I say wit instead of with. You say wit.
That's the neighborhood, you know. So, anyway, boy, this is going to be. This show is going to be dedicated to Nick. I'm going to dedicate. He's not even here. They're in a different world right now over there.
Because
anyway,
Armin's here.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so, I'm going to dedicate the first part of the show to Nick. Do you hear me, Nick?
It's a good dedication.
Nick at noon.
What's that?
I said I'm going to dedicate the first part of the show to you.
Oh, thank you.
Why we should celebrate Halloween.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Thank you.
So we got Halloween coming tomorrow, and then we've got All Saints Day on Saturday, and then we've got All Souls Day, commemoration of all the faithfuls. Tomorrow we'll certainly talk about the saints and there's two ways of celebrating Halloween. How?
The faithful way and the paganistic way.
Well, we're gonna talk about.
That's what I saw. I read somewhere.
Is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so tell me, what is Christina's?
So you said it before, Hallows Eve, the eve of the holy ones.
That's the faithful
way of celebrating, right. And the other way.
Well, what's the other way?
The other way, where people put all those monsters and goblins.
Put on a saint mask. I'm going to put my saint mask on and go get some candy.
Those murders.
So, well, we'll just get right into that. How are you, Geraldine? Are you feeling better now after... you're ranting.
I'm here, Father. I'm trying to be good.
Yeah.
But you know how hard that is.
It is. It's hard.
It's hard for all of us. Because being bad is, somebody said, you know, I gave up for Lent being good, but that goes against my nature.
Wait, that doesn't compute.
Does that compute?
I gave up being good?
That's what she said. I want to be good. So I gave up, you know how I say I gave up candy?
Right.
I
gave up being bad.
That's the way she said it, meaning I want to be good. I gave up being bad, but it goes against my nature.
I'm just quoting how she said it.
Yeah.
Well, you said I gave up being good.
That's what she said.
Oh, she said that.
I'm quoting her.
Which means that if she gives up being good, she'll be bad. I don't know.
Yeah, but
whatever.
What she meant was,
I want to be good.
I gave up being bad. That's what she said.
Lent's not far off anyway, so we're not going to get into that, okay? Well,
for me, Lent is every day.
The point I'm trying to say is
that I understand. No, you don't
it's hard to be
it. You don't
good.
Have to make the point.
She said it's so much fun being bad. That's what she said. I'm just quoting.
I don't know. There's so much fun being bad, you know? Depends on what
that's
you
what
mean.
That's what she
by
said.
Well,
I'm quoting. I'm not saying
we're just trying to analyze.
All right. Well, I got all kinds of things, but I do want to have a little bit of fun in the beginning, okay? I don't know if it's fun, but... and then we'll get into some more serious things. What is the devil's favorite word? this great interview with Cardinal George. I'd like to tap into that at some point, too. What the readings today were among my favorite, especially it was interesting after... We had a finance council meeting last night, and after the council meeting... Some of us stayed around, and we had a pretty lengthy conversation about the state of the world and all that kind of those kinds of things. And the question: What do we do? What should we do? And I woke up this morning thinking about that. And as I went to pray before I went to Mass, I was thinking about that, praying about that. And then I looked at the readings for the Mass. I thought, well, there's the answer
right
there.
Right
so
there.
We'll try to get into that as well. We should probably start with that, but I want to start with something a little bit more fun. This is for Nick. This is for Nick.
Thank you.
Okay, this is for you, Nick.
Nick at noon.
Why Christians should love Halloween.
You're looking Silence. Right at Jerry.
I'm not looking at Jerry.
Well, that's what it looks like, right?
Looked like to me.
No, I guess. Because well, she's right in front of me, so. Right. But why should Christians love Halloween? You know, I've always been, I've never really celebrated the Halloween myself. I mean, I did as a kid, and I liked it. I enjoyed it. I like it.
Let's be honest. But, I just like it.
So here it is. Why? Why is it a great holiday? Because, okay, I'll give you a series of reasons. Okay, since you're not answering the question. It gets people thinking about death.
I can agree.
About death. We don't do nearly enough of that in the modern society.
Jason is chasing you?
Yeah. So death is still a reality of human existence, but we kind of squirrel it away to hospital rooms, or we try to forget it, and except once every year when we have a whole holiday for drawing our attention back to mortality. Because Halloween is the first day of the death triad. What is the death triad? But All Saints Day, All Souls Day. So you got Halloween, mortality, All Saints Day, the second day. That would be mm-hmm. November 1st, and of course All Souls Day on the second. So Halloween concerns the plight of merely mortal. The other 2 days draw our eyes toward ahead to the post-mortem, right? Mm-hmm. What is beyond death? So it's a kind of a wonderful progression, and so we should look forward to it every year. So let's stop ignoring Halloween. It also, another reason is it fires up kids' imagination. And I certainly remember this as a child. I think you must as well. Did you guys, Geraldine? Did you guys go trick or treating when you were a child?
We used to go 2 and 3 weeks ahead of time.
What?
Mm-hmm.
And
we got stuff all the time.
That's the candy.
So you mean for 2 or 3 weeks you were getting candy?
Yes.
Did you dress up all those days?
No.
I just got my candy.
I just got my candy. I want my candy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It just you, or was that everybody?
And it wasn't just me. My friends and I did that together.
But okay, so you and your friends, did the rest of the neighborhood and the city do it?
Yeah.
Really?
Not because it was fairly new at that point. Trick or treat was fairly new.
Now, if you didn't get a treat, what trick would you do?
We did not do tricks.
You didn't do tricks?
No.
But that's part of the.
I know.
All right.
Mm-hmm. But we were basically very good children.
Okay, it's hard to believe, but I well, in those days you were, I'm sure.
Yeah. I can picture knock knock. I mean, you think door. About here comes Jerry.
You think about in those days, you know, the classrooms here. Right. You know, there were 50 to 60 students,
yes.
One nun teaching,
yeah.
And
Rather
had no
tricks.
Problems. No problems with the students. So that's kind of going back to your era, right? So anyway, but yeah, let the kids, you know, the imagination and the rationale behind this is that today, we get too much real advice, right? Get real. Halloween opens the door to the fantastic in a way that can be very healthy. And the person writing this, I don't know who it is writing this, speaks about, you know, taking her kids to Halloween celebrations, and they just love seeing the wild and wacky costumes that people invent, and even the kids, she says, like her own kids, who follow her by dressing as Disney characters or superheroes. So Halloween becomes a great occasion for getting imaginative. And, you know, that used to be part of the life of a child, is imagination, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Make-believe.
Right. That and used to be.
Now used to be,
things
yeah.
Things have changed.
Too real.
Things missing.
No, people, well, you know what? It's Halloween has been perverted. Nowadays, it's like more the adults enjoy it more than the children. And right. I'm not saying that the children, I could see like when the children are dressed up in costumes, mm-hmm. like
sure.
little characters. Or,
yeah.
But when it's become very dark, where they're dressed up as mass murderers, all
oh,
you see
wow.
on the movies that they're showing for Halloween is people killing people, mass, that kind of stuff. And that's why I
but
don't
okay.
celebrate
sign
because
it.
Of what
okay.
I
okay.
see.
Okay, no.
No, because
yeah,
of what
of
I
touch.
See out there.
You're in touch with the world because you watch TV all the time.
No,
I'm
no,
out
no, but
time.
Not only watching TV, but I'm out there.
Sure, you're out there. You are out there. You are out there. We
I
all know you're
out
there. You're not flying high, but you are out there. That's
I think
for
if
sure.
anything, it's a sign of the times. And it's
sure.
Christina, I think this overly, you know, I don't want to say overly sensitive, but I mean, I think this. She's
right, super sensitive, hypersensitive.
I think there's many out there that don't see that. Yeah. There's many out there that don't see it. It's
don't
almost
see
like
what?
It's a fantasy land.
It's a fantasy.
You know,
almost,
you
got to
be very cautious of what is around there.
I'll challenge you on that because watch the news and see how many people get killed. I know Chicago is known for the high. The crime rate.
Yeah.
But on Halloween, it's
don't
even
don't rain on our parade, Christina. We're trying to. I said I want to have a little fun, you know. This is just.
You can have your fun, but that's not the reality, Father.
Hey. Come off it. All right, let's just go on and then we'll see. And then, you know, I'll defer to you eventually.
Yeah, you keep
Okay, here goes. The next, it makes grown ups more reflective about the supernatural.
That's good.
Okay, modern people can be downright paranoid when it comes to accepting the possibly unreal. Many would prefer almost any other shame to that of being classified as gullible or superstitious. So this can be a major problem from the standpoint of evangelization, since many people suppose that they are critical-minded for refusing to believe in things they can't see. But some of these people have a soft spot for Halloween. So it seems to, you know, kind of open up that crack through which the fairies and the spooks and the spirits of ages past can slip. She says, I think it's an enjoyable for a certain sort of person to enjoy a momentary half reprieve from the soul crushing meaninglessness of modern life, rather than raining on the parade. Hey, she's just using the same word, right? So rather than rain on the parade, we should join in and see if we can't make something more of that yearning for the non-material. A non-material. So that's, you got that? Because that's kind of what Nick does, you know? Okay, then here, now you'll appreciate this one, Christina. You have to
and
compare with this.
And then I'll explain later why.
Okay, all right. You're not going to explain anything. You're done. You're through.
No.
In
the Hispanic culture and, and other Latin American countries,
sure.
We celebrate it. And it's not Halloween, but it's the... Saints and All Souls Day.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, no. We're certainly the priority is getting to the religious. So, but the other reason for Halloween is, you know, go back to what Geraldine was saying. What is it? But it's the candy. It's a candy, you know. And God forbid, you know, if the kids today would be so selfish as your generation, Geraldine, when you were 3 weeks already going door to door collecting
candy. Give me my candy.
Right. But,
even something like that, something that's fun, you know, so innocent, where you get your candy, they pervert it because then now parents have to check the candy and make sure there's no poison or
well, that
razor
was even
blades,
in, even,
blades
in my
and
day,
all that.
Even in my day, that was the case.
I
but, you
see,
know,
that's a shame.
But the thing about the razor blade, I read this last year that, you know, there was, I think, one incident of such a thing, you know. And everybody, it's like today, everybody, things get blown out of proportion. But, I mean, one incident is an incident too many, you know. But anyway, but the fact that, you know, you get candy. Who doesn't like candy, right? You like candy, don't you, Christina?
I can't eat it because I'm diabetic.
All right.
Ooh, Christina.
I don't mean to. Wait, what's the reality? It is what it is.
You're just becoming a little bit like Tony, I think, you know.
Tony.
I'm rubbing off on you. That's not good.
Tony.
Another reason, and this is a good, it enhances community. It enhances community.
Community?
Yeah.
The fact is that we live in a family, you know, sometimes we lament our lack of family-centric culture. And many people, maybe people would have more children if they felt like the world didn't revolve so exclusively around adult jobs, adult interests, adult entertainments. But there's this one festivity that gets communities in a very positive way excited to celebrate families and children.
You got to admit, I remember that as a kid when we would go, you know, down Milwaukee Avenue.
Right.
You saw people that you never saw, and it was all... You know, a group of people. I don't see that anymore.
That's right.
I mean, not even in the neighborhoods.
That's right.
People are afraid.
So Halloween is an opportunity.
Exactly.
You know?
Didn't you, Christina,
didn't you just last weekend go to the pumpkin thing? Didn't you say you went pumpkin searching?
No, I didn't. I saw people, families that took their children to the pumpkin patch.
Were you happy to see them?
That was nice.
Yeah, okay. All right.
They weren't celebrating Halloween. It was the pumpkin patch.
Well, that's part of Halloween, isn't it?
That's part
of Halloween.
No, that's part of fall.
Ooh, Christina.
That's part of fall.
Anyway, so it's a family-friendly event.
The harvest.
Culminating in Halloween night when all the adults in the community give a few hours of their lives to making things fun for the neighborhood kids. This is the one time that that happens all year round, and nobody ever tries to give the children tarot cards or induce them or induct them into the satanic cults. Mm. It's an outpouring of good. It's a neighborly fun, for the most part.
It happens at the bars later on.
I told you that the adults are the ones.
Many churches include, you know, and we had this All Saints events on Halloween. Mm-hmm. We did this with our children yesterday, and I think tomorrow they're going to be doing the same thing. So, you know, it kind of draws the kids away from the trick-or-treating, which seems to be, you know, a bit of a shame, you know, if we deprive the kids of the trick-or-treating. Can you imagine that, Geraldine, if you, you know? Your parents said you can't do that?
Yeah, could you imagine what I would be today had I not been allowed to do that?
I don't even want to think about
it. I know, it's very frightening.
Give me some candy.
Another thing is the black and orange construction paper has to be used sometime, right?
Yeah, that's the only time we can.
Because between Christmas and Independence Day, we use the red construction paper. It runs low. Easter gets all the pastel colors. Thanksgiving is a good time for the browns. Notre Dame football consumes the blue and the yellow, right? But Halloween fills out the color spectrum by giving the orange and black its due. And I like those two color combinations, by the way.
Yeah. I never see you wear those two colors.
I wear black.
But not with orange.
Right. I'm not a clown. I can't wear bright colors.
He's not here to amuse you.
That's right. I'm not as serious as you, but I'm certainly not. Anyway, and also another suggestion is we should get in touch. We should not be afraid of our pagan past. That some Christians are wary of Halloween because it's not explicitly Christian. I would argue with that, though, because Halloween is the eve of all the saints, of all saints. But in any case, to understand how people in past times dealt with mortality and death and all that kind of stuff, and anyway, how they grapple with the reality of death. We live in a rather hostile secular culture. It's always tempting to circle around our wagons against anything that doesn't seem Christian enough, but paganism is not our enemy. Our Christian ancestors managed to incorporate the healthy elements of Christian philosophy and culture into their own while still worshiping the one true God in all his splendor and truth. We can do the same.
The problem with that is that nowadays people are very far away from God, and that's a problem right now because they're not, they don't see the Christian or the religious aspect of it.
Right. Well, I can't argue that, you know. I mean, I just wanted to...
No, I'm just...
I just want to have some a little bit of, you know...
Yeah, that's okay.
Boo, Christina. Boo.
Anyway.
I have no problem with
that. Well, let's... Nick, do you appreciate that? Nick, that was for you. Nicholas, that was for you.
He's serious.
Okay.
Now.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You very much. And that's really good reasons, too. And I just had really quickly one other thing. You were talking about how people reflect on the concept of death here with that. Also, I remember hearing in a special, we are not afraid of it because everybody celebrates it with decorations and everything. That's another thing, too.
Good point.
Yeah. Well, because what followed, because it is the feast of all, it's the eve, hallowed eve, the eve of all saints.
And it's also cool, too.
What do you mean cool?
It's a cool holiday.
Like a cold. Is it cold outside?
No,
cool.
It's like awesome. Exciting. It's awesome.
Cool. Like they still use that word, cool. Okay. Very good. Anyway, we'll take a break in and we'll come back and we'll get a little bit more serious, although that was pretty serious. So Christina was certainly serious.
But thank you. Ooh, thank Christina. You.
I love to challenge people.
I challenge
myself as well. So.
Exactly. Okay. So I'm going to challenge you when we get back, all right?
Okay.
All right.
I'll take the challenge.
Don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to the Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Tired of the hype, the half-truths, the outright lies, misrepresentations, laughable claims hitting you smack in the face on TV and radio. If it's not the candidate, then it's a political action committee. Me, I'm your choice. I wanna be a
or hearing the simpering narration that aims to tug at your heartstrings. Because this candidate has made millions, and he's just a...
So enough already. Here is the place where you can find the truth. The Winds of Change, noon to 1, on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. And while you're on the website, please help us. Contribute what you can with any major credit card on our secure website. Vote with your dollars. Vote to support the truth. The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Hello, you silly elves.
Hello, Santa.
Listen, elves, St. Stanislaus Koska is having its annual Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair.
This sounds like fun.
And elves, I'm going to need your help to get ready.
We're happy to help. Santa, when is the Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair?
Well, Elfie, St. Stan's Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair takes place Sunday, November 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Santa, is there going to be food?
You silly elf. Yes.
Yay.
Here, elves, read the menu.
Ooh, mostacholi, etzanais. Turkey and ham sandwiches.
Hot dogs.
Flautas.
Tamales.
Corn.
And so much more.
Is there going to be a raffle?
Ho, ho, ho. Yes, with prizes from $50 to $1,500. Ho, ho, ho. And the drawing is at 4.
Come join us for an afternoon of fun and games with tabs, sale items, bake sale, and so much more. And Santa will be there, too.
Ho, ho, ho.
St. Stan's Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair, Sunday, November 2nd, from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. at 1255 North Noble Street, Chicago, one block north of Division Street.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us on this good Thursday, a nice Thursday. The day before, thanks. The before
Thanksgiving.
Halloween.
Let's just give
Halloween.
Skip Halloween and go to Thanksgiving.
No, get off All Saints Day and All Souls Day.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Need that.
So where to begin? Well, I had this discussion last night. I tell you, I made some notes here. So we're gonna discussion last night. Closure of schools. Oh yeah, they closed a lot of schools have closed in the archdiocese. It was announced yesterday. That kind of precipitated our conversation after the finance council meeting, because there's schools are struggling, churches are struggling. Why must it be? Anyway, there's a whole series of problems. But before I go into that, let me just because I was interested in this interview with Father Francis. Father Francis, Cardinal Francis George. As people know, he's suffering cancer, and he's retired, so we have a new archbishop who will be installed
the
November
18th.
Is the 18th and 19th, yeah. One of those days. Mm-hmm. And so there was this interview with Cardinal George, and I like Cardinal George very much. He's been very good to us. He's been a great shepherd, a good leader. I'm going to miss not having him. You know,
yes.
We welcome certainly Archbishop Tsupich. Tsupich, what's his first name? I forgot.
Blaze.
Tsupich. Not Kupich, but Tsupich.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, so there was a sister Marianne Walsh. She's a sister of mercy, and she works. I believe she works with the. She has some kind of a job or some kind of a position with the USCCB, I believe. That's the United States USCCB, Conference of Bishops, Catholic Bishops. That's it. So anyway, so she has some very interesting questions, and I just find the Cardinal so balanced and so sober, you know, in a sense. The first question, she said, you know, how's he dealing with his the experience of age and illness, and what hope and consolation does he find, you know? And he says, you know, he says many people are living with chronic and life-threatening illnesses in various forms of cancer. But he says, I remember an advice that was given to me when I was 13, and he had contracted polio. Mm-hmm. People know that he has polio. And this was advice given him by a neighbor whose daughter began her experience with the disease a year before. And the father came to my house, ran my leg through some exercises, and said that I was not as severely affected as his daughter. Then he said to me, he says, there's always someone who is worse off than you. Don't ever feel sorry for yourself. And he says, I have recalled this advice many times in different circumstances over the years, and it was the best advice that I ever received. You know, we should all think about that too. You know, what is, the other day we were talking, what is our first experience, but what is the best advice you've ever received in your life, you know? I can tell you, mine, you know, I was out of high school. I had my first job. I was going to school. I took a year. I wanted to take a summer off to go work in the missions in Mexico because I just wanted to do it. I was kind of in that period of discernment, you know, what am I going to do with my life? And the priesthood was kind of there on the radar. And I remember going to my boss. I said, this is what I want to do, you know, to my boss who sent me to his boss. I had to go to the top, like to the Pope. And I said, you know, I'd like to take the summer off, 3 months, and work, you know, go to work in a mission. This is a very noble thing. So I'm thinking everybody's going to just kind of say, absolutely, you know, the door's open. Go, please, please. And and he says, you can go, but there's no guarantee you're going to have your job when you get back. He says, nobody's indispensable. And that was good advice. I mean, I've had a lot of good advice, but that was something that always kind of humbled me it humbled me in a very real way. And I didn't go. I needed the job. So I want to take the chance. I didn't go. But anyway, that's, you guys have any advice, anything that anybody, can you think right off?
One time, one very boss of mine, female, and I really learned a lot from this woman. She told me one time, well, this was years ago, she said, you know, always do your job with the next position in mind.
Yeah.
Because you never know when.
Interesting.
And I've lived by that.
Yeah.
I mean, I always try to do a job as best that I can do and always learn something else.
Yeah.
It's just that I'm in situations now where the more you know, the more you get abused. Yeah. Before long, that job, you know, there's always people that are fearful. I'm not going to teach you anything more because then you'll have my job. But she always said,
interesting.
Always think of the next job in mind. And
well, that's a similar kind of a thing that I remember as well. Somebody told me, always think 10 years ahead. So as you are today, what you do today is going to impact or say something about who you are, who you'll be 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And that always stayed with me. And the other thing that stayed with me was when I really got in trouble from my father. I was just maybe 12, 13 years old. 13, I think I might have been just a teenager, 13. Maybe 13. And we had a curfew we lived on a base, military base, and there was a curfew. And so my father would get us this big tent, and the kids, friends of mine, we would all sleep out, and we were supposed to stay in the tent, and we had gone out of, anyway, I'm not going to go into all the details of what we did, but we did mischievous stuff, but not anything like what goes on today.
No,
you know, it was just we wanted to kind of put ourselves in the middle of the street and wait for the AP, the air police, to come around, and then just kind of split off into different directions so that we would not get caught, right? But just kind of toying with things, you know, and sneaking into the military, the Air Force, the officers' pool, and any just crazy little things like that. So at the end of the year, you know, you get your autograph book, you know, and you know your friends write all the, you know, the things about yourself, like you're such a wonderful friend, you're such a beautiful person, you're, you know, and all that kind of stuff. The girls would say that, but the beautiful person, you're very handsome, you're so cute, I love, you know, not really, I'm just joking. But anyway, but my friends, they all, you know, wrote, remember when we did this, and remember when we did that, and boy, wasn't this fun, and wow, we didn't get caught, and all that kind of stuff. And so I walk into the house one day, and my father's sitting there, he's got the book in his hand, and the look on his face I'll never forget, and he must have seen the look on my face. And as soon as I walked in, he took the book and he threw it across the room, and then he came and he grabbed me by the shirt and he pushed me. Today I could have called the police and said,
the police.
And he pushed me, he shoved me up against the wall, and he says, you know, this isn't the son I'm raising. And he said, you're being a follower. He says, I haven't raised you to be a follower, I've raised you to be a leader. And that, I'll tell you, that in that moment, I knew my father believed in me. It was amazing. And that stayed with me forever. Forever. God, I mean, forever.
Now?
Yeah, really. You know, so anyway.
I was told, be very observant. Be very aware of your surroundings.
Mm. Yeah.
Observe people. And ever since I was a child, I would always observe people, what they're about.
So that's why you've got the binoculars on your desk. That's why I was looking out the window. I wondered why. And I was always embarrassed to ask you why you've got those binoculars on your desk.
It's for all those squirrels that leave presents on
all those stalkers
windowsills
out there.
For you.
All my
You're
fans.
So weird, Christina.
All my fans out there. I'm just kidding. But no,
I do remember something else that somebody told me just recently, that a man that I admire very much, his father told him something about the way his children represent. I don't know if you can finish
oh,
this.
Oh, sure. You know, my father said that, too.
That's
yeah, I know
what
exactly
talking
what you're saying. Yeah, that was another thing.
I say that to my nieces and nephews now.
My father used to line us up. You know, there are 8 of us. And he'd line us up from the oldest to the youngest. And he says, you know, listen, remember, whatever you do, wherever you go, you represent not yourself. You represent your mother and myself, your father, and you represent each other, your brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And that stayed with me as well. So, Geraldine, did anybody give you any advice that you remember, anything that impressed you?
No, it was mostly through actions.
Yeah.
Just watching and knowing that I needed to stay within certain guidelines with my parents. That's how it was.
Yeah.
They never threatened me. They never said, you got to do this or that.
You were never grabbed and thrown against the wall?
No, I wasn't.
No,
I was.
Good for you. I think it should have happened to you. You could, you know, can you imagine?
Maybe it would have helped.
Or keep your enemies close.
That's who. What famous person said that? It's so true. You know, that's why I keep Geraldine very, very close to.
Nice.
Actually, I have deep respect for you. That's why I hope people understand when I joke around with you. It's because I do have utmost respect.
Keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, those kind of friends. Who needs enemies?
Right.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, so the cardinal speaking about this, I thought that was just interesting. You know, very interesting. And he says, you know, through his sickness, that God is, he's purifying. He says, there's a purification that's happening. He says, I have a sense that I'm being taught to let go, to put aside many of the concerns that have shaped my life, and even as a bishop. And he says, I welcome that purification of desires, because it brings me to focus on what is really, really necessary. That is very interesting. He was asked, you know, about the most important issues he will face or what advice he would give to his successor, Archbishop Cupich. And he says, I like what he, as he speaks about, basically he speaks about the role of a bishop. And he says, a bishop stands for Christ. He says, a bishop has a unique perspective on the entire local church with all its peoples, its ministries, it's his challenge is to keep everyone focused on the mission, the purpose of the church, and not let people get distracted by ministries. This is very interesting, isn't it? His is a ministry of unity. Within that vision, he has to see that the church has the institutions necessary to pass on the faith and that the faith is clearly enough presented to call people to conversion of life, Also, he has a special relationship to the priests and to the religious men and women, deacons, lay ministers, and others who have dedicated their time and sometimes their entire life to the mission of the church. He has to see that the poor and all others are part of the church's sense of unity as actors and not just aid recipients. I think that was that's interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And that he has to see that the basic liturgical discipline of the sacramental life of the church is respected because the sacraments are the actions of the risen Christ. They're not just ecclesiastical rites. And then he says, of course, all this has financial dimension, and so the bishop must help to engage people's generosity. That was very interesting how he put it that way. A growing challenge to this normal life of the church and the full range of a bishop's concern is, he says, this is a real challenge, is the secularization of our culture and the conviction on the part of many that religion is a threat to peace and social harmony, not a contribution to the common good. Now, what a profound answer, really.
Wow.
What a profound answer. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. There's a few other things he said, and I just want to share that with you because I thought it was, it says a lot about who he is as a man. He has a real sense of integrity, and He's not a clown. He's not one to be toyed with. He demands respect. You know, his very presence demands respect. And for this, I respect him. All right, we'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listen, Support, and Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Hello, you silly elves.
Hello, Santa.
Listen, elves. St. Stanislaus Koska is having its annual Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair.
This sounds like fun.
And, elves, I'm going to need your help to get ready.
We're happy to help.
Santa, when is the Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair?
Well, Elfie, St. Stan's Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair takes place Sunday, November 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Santa, is there going to be food?
You silly elf. Yes.
Yay.
Here, elves, read the menu.
Ooh, mostacholi, etzanais.
Ahem. Turkey and ham sandwiches. Hot dogs.
Flautas.
Tamales.
Corn.
And so much more.
Is there going to be a raffle?
Ho, ho, ho. Yes, with prizes from $50 to $1,500. Ho, ho, ho. And the drawing is at 4.
Come join us for an afternoon of fun and games with tabs, sale items, bake sale, and so much more. And Santa will be there, too. St. Stan's Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair, Sunday, November 2nd, from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. at 1255 North Noble Street, Chicago, one block north of Division Street.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Did you know that God constructed women's arms differently than men's? I am Father Thomas Loya with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. The axis of a woman's outstretched arms angles inward at the elbow, whereas in men, the axis is straighter. This enables women to bring things to themselves easier than men. Everything about a woman's body, her mind, heart, and soul, is designed for connectedness and to bring the world close to her heart. The language of her body says that God is close, tender, and loving. But she also has what John Paul II called a genius. It is her gift of receptivity stamped in the very design of her body. The Pope said that this makes woman the archetype of the human race because God designed the human race simply to receive his love. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us today. I'm sharing with you a little bit of, we're sharing, I guess. Yeah, I can say we.
Yes.
The four of us. We. This interview with Cardinal George, who's retiring and he's suffering cancer, kind of been a debilitating disease for him. You know, yeah. It's been going on for a few years, it seems to me, already, hasn't it? No, 4 years. Because he had cancer when my father was sick. I remember he was here for something, uh-huh. and I said, you know, my father was going through something similar that he was going through. So, in any case, so the series of questions that were asked of him in this interview, there was a question the sister asked. You know, it was a religious sister, Mary. Mary Frances is always, sounds like a nun's name, doesn't it? Marianne, Sister Marianne, asked him about the. If he agreed that the bishops had been more politically active in recent years and what have been the successes and the weaknesses in this activity. And he says, since the common good is expressed in this country by law, bishops have always addressed changes in our legal system that would undermine the biblical anthropology that our doctrines presuppose. In other words, he says, you know, we are no longer, this is interesting, he's very prophetic too. He says, we are no longer a biblical people.
Mm-hmm.
We're no longer a biblical people, mm-hmm. and the law sees only individuals and their rights instead of persons mm-hmm. and their relationships.
Yes.
So he said, I don't believe that bishops have been more politically active in recent years, but it is true that our political activity is more adversarial, mm-hmm. as the law no longer permits the exceptions that used to safeguard believers whose conscience will not permit them to approve of what has become lawful. The price of citizenship is high when it means one must approve as human rights the killing of the unborn, the creation of false marriages between two men and two women, the universal availability of free contraceptives, especially for women from a very early age. The gospel is a message of freedom, and the Catholic way of life trains people in habits that protect that freedom from slavery to various addictions, etc. And he says, my own conviction is that we must be completely clear about the gospel and how it is to change us, and then we work respectfully with individuals and groups who cannot agree with us. He says, I don't know that we will be permitted to have that pastoral approach in the immediate future. Mm-hmm. We will not be permitted to enter into the public conversation unless we approve of what our faith knows to be morally wrong.
Right.
Again, a very profound answer to the question. I hope these questions get out to the people in the secular world. This is I was reading this from America, the magazine. It's a Catholic magazine, America. He was asked about the about many church leaders have expressed in recent years. She says perhaps you among them. A question. The opinion that a smaller, more unified church might be better. Of course, you know, the Catholic Church is the largest single Christian. I mean, you take all the denominational Christian churches, mm-hmm. would be the what we call Protestant or the non-denominational, which there's no such thing as a non-denominational. All the denominational Christian churches is about 30,000 plus. You add them all together, and the Catholic Church is double the size of all those. It's truly a universal. It's the largest single. Islam is, I think we're 1.2 billion. Islam is 1.5 billion. Islam is different in many, many respects. It doesn't have that kind of unification that we have. But again, the question is how many really
adhere to
the faith, mm-hmm. you know. But anyway, the question is about is it better to have a smaller, more unified church? And Pope Francis seems once again to be encouraging people of diverse views to be part of the church. What do you think of this approach? And the cardinal says, he says, you know, I don't know any bishop who has said that he believes a smaller, more unified church might be better.
Mm-hmm.
What I have heard Pope Benedict say is what Karl Rahner, a great theologian, once expressed, that it will be so difficult to be a Christian that the church will be composed of mystics and others similarly committed, but this is not represented as an ideal to be hoped for. Christ died to save the entire world, and the church's job is to share Christ's gifts as widely as possible among all peoples and nations without exception. No believer wants the grace gained for everyone by Christ's death and resurrection be wasted or ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
So within a universal church, he says, within a universal church, there will be not only sinners, all of us are sinners, he says, mm-hmm. but also those whose commitment varies from time to time and place to place. Everybody's on their own journey, right?
Yeah.
And there's ups and downs and peaks and valleys, and we can get hot, we can get cold, we can be lukewarm as we're working out our salvation, right,
mm-hmm.
in this world. And so the cardinal goes on to say, the parable of the kingdom speaks of a church filled with wheat and weeds, the wheat and the weeds, and not a field purged of anyone who does not understand or accept all the demands of the faith. This is a very important point. Recent popes have done their best to motivate Catholics to support missionary activity and to enter into the new evangelization, calling everyone into Christ's body, the church. So, you know, this idea, you know, a smaller, more unified, it's not what we desire. It's, as he quotes Pope Benedict, who quoted Karl Rahner, that in the future, it's more and more difficult to be a Christian in the world today, so that the church will be composed of mystics and others similarly committed, which means, what does he mean by mystic? But people that have to be very, very spiritual. One has to be really have their eyes firmly fixed on Jesus.
Be vigilant.
Vigilant.
So it's not about quantity, but it's about quality.
Authenticity, quality,
sure.
Yeah. So that to be a committed Christian, one has to be spiritual. It's going to require the nurturing of our relationship with the Lord, mm-hmm. really. Basically, that's what he's saying.
And didn't he say at the end he was going to separate the sheep from the goats?
Jesus said that. Yeah. In the meantime, the wheat and the chaff grow together,
mm-hmm.
right? The rain falls on the good and the bad, Jesus says, right? The rain falls on the good and the bad. The sun shines on the good and the bad until the harvest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Separate the wheat from the chaff or
sure.
the sheep from the goats. All right. Pope Francis, the question, the statement, Pope Francis may be the first pope who has a pastoral leader, who as a pastoral leader was faced with the kind of desperate poverty that is no longer experienced in this country. Is there a communications gap between his experience of how economics operate and those in this country who tend to view the operation of our economy uncritically? And the cardinal said there's a gap between any pope on those who would accept our economic system uncritically. He says the major criticisms of any economic theory are in the Catholic social teaching that the universal destination of all material goods, the treatment of the poor, as the gauge of a just economic system, the need for some regulation of markets so that return on capital does not completely outrun gains from wages, the social mortgage of private property, etc. He says both Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict contributed to rather sophisticated advances in the Church's teaching on economic order. And then he makes a very important point. He says they were able to address the technical challenges of supply-side economics, the production of wealth, so that more wealth cannot be distributed, the creation of an economic order founded on gift. Did I just confuse you when I said that?
Yes.
It's confusing. Mm-hmm. In other words, that it's not just a matter of the distribution of wealth, but the creation of an economic order founded on gift, the free giving gift. You know,
mm-hmm.
I hope that's a little bit clearer. So it's not just that you take the wealth and it's got to be but there's this sense of gift,
right. Mm-hmm.
An economic order founded on gift,
right.
The gift of self, the gift of the sharing of our goods, right? And of course, speaking of Pope Francis, he says, the common criticism is that, he speaks from the experience and the analysis of South Americans who believe that some are rich because others are deliberately kept poor.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, when we get into the whole economic stuff, it gets a little bit interesting. Let's take a final break. We'll come back, and then he's got a couple of more things here. And then I just got to go into that reading today, too, because it was very beautiful. So we'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Tired of the hype, the half-truths, the outright lies, misrepresentations, laughable claims hitting you smack in the face on TV and radio. If it's not the candidate, then it's a political action committee.
Or hearing the simpering narration that aims to tug at your heartstrings. Because this candidate has made millions, and he's just a...
So enough already. Here is the place where you can find the truth. The Winds of Change, noon to 1, on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. And while you're on the website, please help us. Contribute what you can with any major credit card on our secure website. Vote with your dollars. Vote to support the truth. The Winds of Change. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Hello, you silly elves.
Hello, Santa.
Listen, elves. St. Stanislaus Koska is having its annual Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair.
This sounds like fun.
And, elves, I'm going to need your help to get ready.
We're happy to help.
Santa, when is the Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair?
Well, Elfie, St. Stan's Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair takes place Sunday, November 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Santa, is there going to be food?
You silly elf. Yes.
Yay.
Here, elves, read the menu.
Ooh, mostacholi, etzanais.
Ahem. Turkey and ham sandwiches.
Hot dogs.
Flautas.
Tamales.
Corn.
And so much more.
Is there going to be a raffle?
Ho, ho, ho. Yes, with prizes from $50 to $1,500. Ho, ho, ho. And the drawing is at 4.
Come join us for an afternoon of fun and games with tabs, sale items, bake sale, and so much more. And Santa will be there, too.
Ho, ho, ho.
St. Stan's Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor
Center Fair, Sunday, November 2nd, from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. at 1255 North Noble Street, Chicago, one block north of Division Street.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us, as always. Sharon, we're sharing a little bit of the interview with Cardinal Francis George, who is just 1 month. No, less than a month.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. A couple of weeks, actually. He's got a little over a couple of weeks. And we'll have Archbishop Tupich. I wonder if he's here yet. He's probably not yet in Chicago, but
I think he's been back and forth.
He's been at different events. Has he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, so just the last. There's a series of other questions, but I wanted to share this one because I thought it was very interesting, and I concur with what he says. I agree. The question was, it had been to do with reconsideration of celibacy of the priesthood in the Latin Church seems for the first time to be a possibility. This is Sister Mary Ann Walsh is making a statement, right? Seems to be a possibility. So do you agree that it is only a discipline open to change, or does it have doctrinal implications? And his answer is really quite profound. He says, celibacy for the sake of God's kingdom is a gospel value. He says, the Latin Church chooses as candidates for the ordination to the priesthood only from among those who can also say they have been called to celibacy. Since the priest represents Christ as head of the church, it is most fitting that the priest have as bride only Christ's own bride, the church. He's espoused to the church. Mm. The discipline, he says, quote unquote, the discipline goes back to the end of the Roman persecutions. People often say, that it started at much later. But no, the discipline goes back to the end of the Roman persecutions. He says, even in the Eastern churches, the bishop must always be celibate. In the Eastern churches, always celibate. The relation between Christ and the church is espousal. Christ is espoused to the church. Mm. The whole of the Bible is about a nuptial. Mm. Yes. God wedded to his people. And consequently, so is the relationship between the ordained priest and the church. And he says, now, in a post-Freudian culture, celibacy is an object of hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, its witness is more important than ever. Its witness is more important than ever. It reminds people of the total self-surrender that is at the heart of the gospel of gospel radicalism. This is not, therefore, I agree with this. I absolutely agree with this 100%. This is not, therefore, the time to change the discipline here. He says, the anger that gathers around this question and around the question of the ordination of women, the indissolubility of marriage, the redefinition of marriage or the definition of marriage, he says, bears witness to how a corrupt culture forms its devotees. They are also class issues. These are not the issues at the center of poor people's concerns. These are the concerns of those who are most identified with current cultural trends, made it and believe the whole world should think like them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it was interesting at the Extraordinary Synod how the African bishops and the bishops of the Orient, of the East, had to call the whole synod back to the reality is that some concerns that are unique to, they're not historical, nor are they, they're neither historical, nor are they universal, nor are they biblical, nor are they cosmic, because we get so fixated on, this is just a symptomatic of how powerful the pop culture is, that we get so sucked into, bullied into political correctness. We don't even realize it, how we're manipulated, in a sense, in a real sense. So he says at the same time, he says we have to meet all people where they are and consequently search for ways to explain and present the gospel in all cultures. But he makes a very good point there. We're just about out of time, if you get a chance, you can download it. It's from the American magazine, but it's America, the magazine America. It's a Jesuit, it used to be, I think it's still a Jesuit magazine, Catholic, but very interesting. He's a very profound thinker. He really is. He's a very profound thinker, very deep thinker, and He's got a very strong philosophical base, not just anthropological, philosophical, a great man of the church, I have to say. He's a great man of the church. The reading today, so last night, and I'll kind of conclude with this, but we were after the finance council meeting, because we just received the word. There was just issued that a number of schools closed, Catholic schools have closed in the Archdiocese, including St. Hyacinth's, where I was my first 6 years. That's where I was a priest. And we had, at that time, we had 700 students, if you can imagine, 700 students. So they were down to, I don't know how many, maybe 135 or something, but they've been struggling for some, as many schools are. And so that was one of the schools that is going to close. This will be the last year for the school. We're talking about just how difficult it is even to maintain the parishes. You know, you've got parishes, a block away from each other in Chicago in the city. At the time, you had big communities, big families, and all that. And so the fact that families are much smaller, the fact that we live in a very mobile society, there's a lot of movement, the fact that people don't commit to one place or another as they did in the past, makes it difficult. And the fact that we live in a radically secularized society, highly individualistic and very suspect of the church, certainly, religion and all that. So talking about that and many other things, the problems in the society and all that, somebody had asked, well, what do we do? And it's just two things that came off in the reading this morning, one from the Gospel of Luke where the Pharisee says, go away to Jesus. They said, go away. And that's when he said, we've talked about this earlier, but that's when he says, because the Herod wants you to, he wants to kill you, but they want him to go away as well. And he says, go and tell that fox, that I cast out demons, I perform healings today and tomorrow, and on the third day I accomplish my purpose, and I'll continue to do this, And then the very sad in the voice of our Lord, to see this, to go into this prayerfully, but this is when elsewhere in the Gospel, he actually weeps, says he wept. And he says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those who sent you, how many times I yearn to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, but you are unwilling, you refused me, and behold, your house will be abandoned, because it's what you, and it's so true today, This is the prophetic, to read the signs of the times, that if we don't return to the Lord, if we don't return to the faith. But St. Paul today in the first reading, and we'll have to end here, he says, brothers and sisters, draw your strength from the Lord and from his mighty power. Put on the armor of God so that you may be able to stand firm against the tactics of the devil. For our struggle is not with flesh and blood, but with the principalities, with the powers, with the world rulers of this present darkness, with the evil spirits in the heavens. Therefore, put on the armor of God, resist on the evil day, having done everything to hold your ground. In other words, hold your ground, stand fast in truth, in righteousness, in readiness for the gospel of peace, hold faith, and quench all the flaming arrows of the evil one. And he goes on and on. But anyway, it's so true, isn't it? So true. All right, everybody, thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow, God willing. Almighty God bless all of you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? Meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.